Right, so break from Hebrews tonight. We've only got about three more sermons in the book of Hebrews. We'll come back to them over the next month or so. But just to say, I know that some of you love tonight's sort of service. Some of you are like, what is this? Next week, next Sunday evening, we're all going to be pretty wrecked, I think, from Pentecost 19. And I'm anticipating a lot of people next week will just be like, you know what? We were here for the baptism service in the morning. We were here for the barbecue in the afternoon. I'm just going home. But if you are staying next week, we're going to do a really gentle, kind of fairly liturgical Book of Common Prayer evening worship thing. So if that grabs your fancy, let me know. But we're going to look at this passage a little bit tonight that we've just had read for us, 2 Corinthians 12. We have preached through 2 Corinthians, so if you want the full kind of double-barreled sort of 40-minute sermon on this passage, get online to our website, mie.org.uk, download it and have a listen. Tonight I'm just going to pick out one or two sentences from it and reflect with us on really around this question, around our fear of evangelism. All day today with Pentecost 19 kind of launching, if you like, evangelistically tomorrow, all of today, a joint service at St. John's this morning, Bixley Farm this afternoon, 8 o'clock service this morning, and now tonight we've been preaching around sort of looking at questions that are affecting very much the question of what we're doing and why we're doing it and how we can do it, how we can take this week and in a very particular way set it apart as a week for mission and a week for evangelism and give it our focused attention in a way that perhaps we don't do at other times. And, you know, Pete was talking this morning on learning from Jesus as he deals with the woman at the well in John chapter 4 and things that Jesus doesn't do, things that he does do, and how that can shape us in our approach to sharing the gospel. At Bixley Farm, about 2 hours ago, I was preaching on being motivated by love, you know, and how you can tell when somebody's going through the motions. They've got all the words right, but the heart isn't right, the motivation isn't right, and it just sounds wrong, sounds harsh, it sounds brittle, it sounds abusive almost, and how important it is that as we step into these things over these next weeks, what's driving us is our love for people and our love for the Lord. And tonight, I just want to pick up for a few minutes this question of fear and anxiety and how often our fear stops us talking about Jesus with people, how often our fear stops us even inviting somebody to hear somebody else talk about Jesus. Because that is something that we struggle with, and we have struggled with it over and over again over the years. I think we're getting a lot better at it. Some of the stories over the last couple of days that I've been hearing, people telling me that, you know, they've invited somebody and how excited they are by that, and just amazed that people have said yes, or just telling the story of how they navigated it when people said no. And in a few minutes, you know, if you've got a couple of those stories you'd like to share, it'd be really good to hear. Both where you've invited somebody and they've said yes, but actually, for a lot of us, we've invited people who've said, no, I'm not coming to your church, Prentice. You're mad. Because this is a huge thing. So let's just try to get into this. Why is it that we allow our fear to stop us talking to people about Jesus or even inviting them to an event where they can hear somebody else talk about Jesus? And I think part of the problem is how we became Christians ourselves. Right? Part of the problem is that when we became Christians, nobody told us that it would be a costly thing. When we became Christians, we were not told the cost of being a Christian. When I was in Algeria a couple of summers ago, for a few days, and I was talking to some church leaders in Algeria, and when they become Christians, they know that they will probably go to prison at some point. And that is spelled out as soon as they express any interest in coming to Christ. The pastor will sit down with them and say, hang on, you just need to stop. You need to understand, your family are going to reject you. You will lose your job. You may go to prison. Do you still want to come to Christ? Now, that's very different from the baptism preparation we do, you know, at MIA. But actually, that sets the tone. So people step into a life of discipleship expecting rejection, knowing that they will face hostility, knowing that people are going to treat them differently because they are a Christian. Do you remember if you did the Lent course with us, we were looking at this question of what we can learn from the persecuted church, and we heard quite a lot from this guy, a Romanian pastor called Yusuf Ton, and we heard him teaching that his baptism preparation was exactly the same. It was just like, if you go through with this, make sure you know that you are stepping into a life that will be characterized by suffering, that will be characterized by dealing with hostility, that will be characterized by rejection. That, you know, when Jesus says, take up your cross and follow me, all right, that has meaning, right? It is an invitation to step into a life of struggle and of sacrifice and of cost. It's the sort of stuff that Jesus talks about in Luke chapter 14. Large crowds are traveling with Jesus. And turning to them, he says, I love this. Jesus' approach to mission is so different from ours. All right, we try to make it as easy as possible for people to come to Jesus. All right, Jesus always seems to make it as hard as possible for people to follow him. So here he is. Large crowds are following him. And this is Jesus' sermon. If anyone comes to me and does not hate their father and mother, their wife, their children, their brothers, their sisters, even their own life, such a person cannot be my disciple. Whoever does not carry their cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. Right? That's Jesus' evangelism. It's like, if you're going to follow me, be prepared to lose everything. That's the condition. Suppose one of you wants to build a house or a tower. Won't you first sit down and estimate the cost? See if you have enough money to complete it? If you lay a foundation and you're not able to finish it, everyone who sees it will ridicule, saying, this person began to build and wasn't able to finish. And I don't know about you, when I became a Christian, nobody told me that. Nobody told me that. And I think the problem with that is that we become a Christian and we don't expect to have to endure hostility. We don't expect to have to endure rejection. We don't expect to have to endure being mocked. It's because we were not led to Christ properly. And in a way, that's understandable. The UK used to be a very, very benign culture. Many of you I don't because I'm too young, but many of you will remember a time when it was more weird not to go to church on Sunday than it was to go to church on Sunday. The majority of people would go, whether they were Christians or not, they would go to church on a Sunday. Yeah? When Billy Graham preached at Haringey, 1955, about 44,000 people during his rallies came to the front to confess Jesus Christ as Lord. 44,000 people. 90% of those people were already churchgoers. Yeah? Now, that is no longer the case. That is no longer the case. I'm not saying that people still don't go to church anymore unless they are Christians. There are still people who go to church who aren't Christians. I'm sure of that. But it's a much smaller percentage, and it's much more normal now, in cultural terms, for people to not go to church. All right. In fact, it's not just that. It's that things are beginning to get actually quite hostile and antagonistic towards Christianity. Last Sunday night, in our prayers, we were looking at three people in the media at the moment who have either lost their jobs or have felt compelled to resign their jobs because of opinions they hold shaped by their faith in Jesus Christ. Yeah? This isn't like, you know, stuff that we're reading about that's happening in other countries anymore. This is happening down the road, like, you know, just down the A14. Yeah? And you know, that's happening culturally. It's happening personally. You know, personally, we are probably increasingly experiencing situations where we don't feel that speaking about Jesus would be particularly welcome here, or when we do speak about Jesus, we face rejection. So, time for those stories. I've invited two people one person who did laugh, and somebody else who just said straight up no. You know, I think we're very good at celebrating the stories where I wasn't expecting them to say yes, and I invited them, and then they said yes, and I was amazed, and it was brilliant, and thank you, Jesus, and we're all like, yay, thank you, Jesus. But actually, over these last weeks, who's invited somebody to something, and they've said no? Yeah, look at that, pretty much everyone. Man, a lot of people have invited people who've said yes, which is brilliant, but we've all experienced. Anybody want to, yeah, it's like therapy, this, isn't it? Anybody want to share what happened? It doesn't have to be a dramatic thing. It's just I invited them to something and they said no. Just that's what's happening. It's not even that people are going to come along out of politeness. They're just going, no, I'm not. I don't want to go to your church. I don't want to go to your church. And that is probably, you know, polite. Now, there is still hunger. You know, there is though, Pete was talking about this earlier today, this spiritual restlessness that gets misplaced onto all kinds of different things. People are still looking for a satisfaction and a joy and a contentment that can only come through Christ. A guy I quote a lot, Augustine from the 5th century, a bishop in North Africa, once wrote a prayer in which he said, our hearts are restless until they find their rest in you. And that restlessness, it's still there. It's being attached to all kinds of strange and wonderful things as people try to find relief from their restlessness. They try to find rest. But we know that actually it's only going to be in Christ. But it's like people aren't looking to the church anymore as a place where they can have their spiritual quest resolved. In fact, people will almost go anywhere else and talk to anyone else and listen to anyone else rather than actually listen to Christians and listen to the church. Yeah, and so that's the world that we live in. That's the world that we're beginning now to have to work out our Christianity and our discipleship. And to do that in a way that is unapologetic, and to do it in a way that is public, in a culture that is increasingly telling us, if you want to be a Christian, that's fine, but don't bring it into the public discourse of our society and culture. All right? It's a personal, private thing. Keep it personal and private. All right? Now, when that's there, and there are these growing levels of hostility that we're beginning to see very unambiguously now, fear is a very natural response to that. All right, fear is there. We don't want conflict. You know, unless you're a sort of a complicated person. You know, there are some people who like conflict. You know, there are some people who go out of their way to pick fights. All right, most of us aren't like that. All right, most of us will do pretty much anything we can to avoid conflict. And so there is this sense of fear and anxiety that is around us being public about our faith in Christ. Still more, you know, talking to other people about that and inviting other people to consider it for themselves. But as I've been thinking about this over the years as a pastor, I've begun to wonder why does our fear stop us? You know, because actually there's lots of things in life that we're scared about. but we do them anyway. But this fear that we have about being public about our faith, this fear that we have about talking to people about Jesus, this fear actually, we really struggle to overcome it. It actually silences us. Lots of things we're afraid of, but we do them anyway. We overcome that fear. And yet so often, this fear cripples us. It cripples us. You know, and some of us are acutely aware of our fear. We're coming into Pentecost 19, and some of you can't wait for this to be done and dusted, because every time somebody gets up and talks about inviting someone or talking to somebody about Jesus, we're ashamed and we're embarrassed because we haven't done that. And we know we've had opportunity to, and we haven't done it. And we haven't done it because we're afraid. All right? And you're waiting for Pentecost to be over so that people aren't getting up at the front saying, have you invited to this anymore? Do you know what I mean? Partly I want to say, look, I want to just say, the church is a place of grace. Okay? We don't want people. I don't want people to be sitting feeling guilty. I don't want people sitting feeling condemned. I don't want people sitting feeling ashamed because they haven't invited someone. Or because there was that moment when they knew they could, but somehow they just couldn't get the words out. You know, I've done that in the last couple of weeks. I've done that where I've just stood and I've been like, this is an absolute gift of an opportunity. And it's gone. And I didn't have the guts to speak. The words get here and you just can't. Sometimes I've done it. Other times the fear's crippled me. You know, and that's... That's part of us learning as Christians how to do this. And it's this thing that I want us to try to navigate here. It's like, how do we do this? How do we do this? Because it's not something that's going to go away after this week. You know, it's not, our evangelism is not just Pentecost 19. It's not just an event. Our evangelism, our mission, our outreach is increasingly being embedded in the life of our church, and it is something that we are called to do as Christians. It's part of our lifestyle. It's part of what it means to be a Christian. We somehow managed to recalibrate our Christianity to think, well, you know, Christianity is about praying and doing Bible study and going to church and stuff, and some Christians, it might be about evangelism as well. I'm saying it's not an optional extra for people who feel called to that or people who are inclined. This is part of what it means to be a Christian. It is to be evangelistic. It is to be missional. And we need to get back into this being a way of life, not just being something that's tied to particular events like Pentecost or the Alpha Course or, you know, a messy church Saturday or something. This is something that we're doing all the time. And part of the reason is that actually it is taking a lot longer to get people to a place where they will be willing to consider Jesus. It's taking, all the research showing, it's taking about 18 months just to get people as far as going on an Alpha course. Not 18 months for people to become Christians, but you need to be talking to people, praying with people, reading the Bible with people. They might come to, you know, a nice carol service or something. But it's going to be 18 months, 2 years before they're really going to hear what you've got to say, take it seriously enough to go on an Alpha course or to actually come to church with you. So we think, well, I invited somebody to church and they said no. Well, okay. Invite them again and again and again, because it's going to take ages for people. And so this needs to be something that's much more an integral part of our life and our relationships with people. People have a much bigger journey to take now than they did when Billy Graham was preaching 1954, 1955. We'll look at all this properly another time. But I still want to ask this question. Why does our fear cripple us? Because the reading we've just had is really, really interesting, because Paul knows fear. Paul knows weakness. Paul knows the anxiety of facing insults and hardships and persecutions and difficulties. All right? Paul knows the same He faces the same prospects that we face, and far more severe prospects than we face in his proclaiming of Christ. And yet, that doesn't stop Paul, does it? Right? What Paul's like, oh my gosh. So we do this, okay? We're like, oh, they might reject me. Oh, they might get angry with me. I better not say anything. Paul's like, they might be angry with me. They might be hostile. They might reject me. But I'm going to do it anyway. We face that prospect and we are silenced by it. Paul faces that prospect and he goes forward anyway and does it. And he celebrates his inadequacies. The things that for us stop us, the things that for us silence us, for Paul, they drive him on. He boasts in his weaknesses. He celebrates his inadequacies. He delights in these things. It's like, well, you know, we're like, oh, I'm afraid of rejection, or I'm shy, or what if I offend, or well, what if I get it wrong, and what if I can't answer the questions? Like Paul, for Paul, those are not considerations that stop him speaking of Jesus. In fact, Paul's attitude is, God is glorified in my weakness. So here's the question. Why is he not glorified in ours? All right? Our weakness stops us speaking. Paul's weakness is just a step on the journey towards him proclaiming Christ, and God is glorified in his weakness. And I think the answer to the question is this. Paul sees how his fears would limit him, and then he goes beyond his limits, and he can do that because he is confident that God will be there to catch him. Yeah. That's the thing that allows Paul to go beyond his weakness, beyond his inadequacy, beyond his fear. He has this deep conviction that on the other side, God will be there to catch him. And I want to suggest to you that our problem is we don't have that same conviction. The fear that is under all our other fears is the fear that God will not come through for me. That if I go through, if I step out and I talk to somebody about Jesus, I go public about my faith, I invite someone, right? If I face hostility, if I face rejection, God's not going to be there to help me to navigate that. All right? I'm going to go out on a limb. What if God doesn't come through? Whereas for Paul, Paul's like, okay, I might face rejection here, but God will be with me in the midst of that, and he will help me to be resilient in the face of it. So Paul isn't crippled by his fear. All right, he trusts God, which is why God is glorified then precisely in Paul's weaknesses and inadequacies. The difference is not Paul was some kind of sociological psychopath. He didn't have any fear or anxiety or anticipate rejection. He did. But he knew that God would be in it with him and that God would enable him to live through that and to thrive through that. And I want to suggest to you that one of the ways to, in a godly way, to overcome our fear, overcome our sense of inadequacy, overcome our weakness, is to recognize that God has gone ahead of us. Whether we are facing rejection or acceptance, whether we get a yes or a no, whether we have a great conversation with somebody or not, either way, the situation that we will be in is a situation that God will meet us in. Let me finish with this. Acts 17 was a passage read a little bit earlier on by the music group. All right, this is Paul. Now, this is an extraordinary thing that Paul says in his sermon in Athens. He says, from one man, from Adam, God made all the nations that they should inhabit the whole earth. Now, look at this, all right? God has been sovereignly ruling and overruling the details of each person's life. All right, where they live, when they live, it's all ordained by God. All right, he marked out their appointed times in history, the boundaries of the land. Right, now why is God involved in people's lives like that? Well, God did this so that they would seek him,
and reach out for him. Perhaps reach out for him and find him, though he's not far from any one of us. Now, I want you just to think about this as I bring this to a close. Think about somebody you know who's not a Christian. All right? God has ordained the circumstances of their life. All right? God has chosen where they would live, when they would live. All right? He's ordained that. Which means, if you know them, it means that, amongst other things, he has ordained that that person is living in relationship with you. Right? He's put them within your sphere of influence. He has put them at a point in space and time where they will know you and be in relationship with you. Why has he done that? So that they might seek him and perhaps reach out for him and find him. How's that going to happen? Because you're going to talk to them about Jesus. All right, get that. You know, that's how involved God is with this. And that is what gives Paul the confidence that he's going to step out, he's going to talk to these people, because that is why he is there, that is why they are there, so that he can speak about Jesus, they will seek him, and whatever happens, whether he's accepted or rejected, God will be there on the other side of him, going over the top like that. God will be there to help him navigate either the rejection or to give him wisdom in the conversation that will follow. Right? The problem is not what other people can do or what our culture is doing. The problem of our fear comes down to our theology and our vision of God. A God who is at work in us and in the lives of other people.